Expedia and Visit Scotland invite you to come experience the beauty that awaits in Scotland. The sweep of wild coastlines, quiet lochs, and untamed landscapes. Fresh cuisine that feels rooted in the land. Come experience the kind of stillness that stays with you long after you leave. Plan your Scottish escape today at expedia.com/visit Scotland.
Just walk away. Don't turn around.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with award-winning dynamic guitarist, vocalist, and bandleader Derek Dove of the Peacekeepers. We get into his roots, the band's beginnings, their evolution, and a trip to Kansas City for a performance at Knucklehead Saloon on Wednesday, May 27, 2026. After years of building a grassroots following, the band is hitting a real moment, fresh off top honors at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis, where Derek also took home Best Guitarist. His story starts on a bandstand in southern Georgia, playing drums in his father's group at 10 years old, long before he ever stepped out front as a guitarist and singer. There was a stretch in Nashville, time on the road with other bands, and eventually a return home where he formed the Peacekeepers around 2010. We get into their KC visit, new music, their history, and so much more. Enjoy this interview.
Well, man, you're coming to Kansas City. It seems like everything's going good for you, so I'm looking forward to getting into it. Thank you for taking a minute out today.
Absolutely, brother. I apologize about the time thing.
Oh, don't worry about it.
Told me the wrong time.
It's first world problems, man. I mean, at this point, with everything that's going on in the world, that this is the least of what we have to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's wild. So, well, man, let's dig into it. I want to begin, before we get into the Kansas City trip, the new music, everything that's going on in your world. 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing everything, especially for musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it changed the way that you approach music and life today?
When the pandemic hit, we were just starting to put out our original music. We did our first album was 2018, and we had, you know, some local regional success, and then the pandemic hit, and it's like, boom. So we had to kind of back up and punt. Everybody did. Luckily, we're in an area where people, instead of going out, they just started having private parties. You know, they would have backyard parties or things like that. And the musicians who stuck with it ended up doing a lot of those parties. So around Georgia and North Florida and things like that. So we really got a chance to interact with people on more of a personal level instead of, you know, you go to a show at a bar, you know, or a concert or a theater, and there's a disconnect, you know.
Tomorrow morning is knocking. Stock your fridge now. How about a creamy mocha frappuccino drink? Or a sweet vanilla? Smooth caramel maybe? Or a white chocolate mocha? Whichever you choose, delicious coffee awaits. Find Starbucks Frappuccino drinks wherever you buy your groceries.
But when you're playing somebody's backyard or living room, you know, I mean, you really get a chance to talk with people. You really get a chance to get to know them. They get to know you. It makes it a whole lot more personal. And so that's what we try to do now, is just be really personal with people, because I think in a world of, God, there's so much fakeness going on, and, you know, people, they look this way on stage and act this way off stage, or they do this or do that, you know, and we just try to be our authentic selves 100% of the time. You know, there's no put on, we're just us, man.
Yeah. But that's the blues, man. I mean, that's the way that genre is. You've always had, it's the
absolutely
truth. Whether you like it or not,
the truth. The truth. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
So let me ask you this. Before we get into coming to Kansas City, May 27 at Knuckleheads, before we get into the award that you just won at the International Blues Fest in Memphis, let's begin at the beginning, the alpha. How did music, how did the blues, how did this career that you have now make sense in the beginning?
I grew up around music. my dad, you know, was a radio DJ and he was also a musician. So, you know, playing in clubs and, you know, little Moose Lodges and Elks Lodges with my dad growing up. And then high school, you know, me and him were doing acoustic shows together at little restaurants. And, but it really hit me when I was probably, you know, I started playing guitar at 12, but about 15, 16 years old, I saw Johnny Lang on TV and I was like, wait a minute, this kid's like my age.
Yeah.
You know, he's like 2 years older than me. And I'm like, he's singing the blues, you know, which is what I already loved, but he had this fresh take on it that it just connected with me as, you know, I was represented, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It wasn't these, you know, 60-year-old guys and like, man, I'm just the young kid hanging out. It's like, wait a minute, this guy's doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, then you had Kenny Wayne Shepherd and I was just like, wow, there's a big thing. So even, you know, in high school, right after high school, you know, that's when I discovered Joe Bonamassa. And it was just like, these guys, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to make my little cutout in the world of my music. So, you know, I hit the road with a bunch of different bands and, but the blues has always been there. Like my first musical hero, even as a kid, was, you know, Little Richard. I love that stuff. Like it just, that soul, it hit me. And then I remember my dad giving me his, he would give me some vinyl every now and again to go listen to my room. And when he handed me the Muddy Waters album, Hard Again, that just bunch of dudes playing in a room, playing music and laughing and having a good time. I was like, that's what it's about. You know, just, you know, I was a drummer and I watched Stevie Ray Vaughan on Austin City Limits. And I was like, I don't want to play drums anymore. I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to play guitar. But yeah, it was the soulness, I think. And like we said earlier, the truth of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a bunch of pop stars dancing on stage with glitter and, you know, it's an authentic, real, you get to experience them as a person in the blues, you know, and country music to an extent, like, but blues was just always truth. And I always appreciated that. It was never a put on.
You know, you mentioned Johnny Lang and that meteor that went across the sky that captivated all of us at his age. But in Kansas City, Brody Buster was doing the same thing early on. He was this child prodigy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was like,
yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, there was a show on, it was the country of CMT. It was called Crook and Chase, and it was a couple. And he was on there, and he was a harmonica master, and B.B. King saw him. And it was that. And it was like, and there's something different.
Wow.
When you have a blues prodigy that's young, you realize there's something special about that sauce. There's an old soul element that's different. It's like the good Robert Johnson. Your soul was bartered by something good. Right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely, man.
But that's interesting how you put that, where it does give you hope because they're young, because you always see these cats and they're older. You know, we always see Muddy Waters and and all these guys, and they're older.
Well, you think, like, when you're playing, you're like, okay, well, I'm 16 years old. I've got to go out on the road and earn it for the next 40 years. Mm-hmm. And then I will be hopefully in the ballpark of some of these guys. But then when you see somebody that's a lot younger, that has that thing, it kind of gives you hope to go, okay, well, it's not going to take 40 years of, you know, sleeping in a van and, you know, paying my dues. Like there's a chance of, okay, if I just, you know, keep going and consistency and persistence and, you know, So yeah, it was a breath of fresh air to realize that, you know, I could do what I want to do because these guys have shown us the way.
So did you see Muddy Waters live?
I never got to.
Okay. So my question to you is this. What was the first live show that you saw that just blew your top, that made you think, I want to be up there? It galvanized that idea.
So, like I said, I've always been into music, and being around my dad, you know, always going to shows and all this. But some friends of mine, we all got together in high school, and we were, you know, you wouldn't put us together in any other aspect. It was just, we were, you know, from all different points of life and different sides of the track. But we all got together and we're like, hey, why don't we go to a concert together? We were friends in like choir is what it was. So, and we got to talking about music, and they're like, so about 2 hours south of us is the Live Oak Spirit of the Suwannee Music Park. And they have big festivals and concerts and stuff down there. But we're listening to the radio, and my dad ended up, I think, getting tickets to the radio station. And it was the B.B. King Blues Fest tour that come through. And I started talking with a couple of my buddies, and they were like, man, that kind of sounds fun. And one guy was just like, I don't know who any of these people are, but I just kind of want to go hang out with y'all, you know? So we were 15, 16 years old, and it was the lineup was B.B. King, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Tower of Power, and Indigenous.
Wow.
And it was Indigenous's first tour.
Wow.
And Indigenous hit the stage first. And that just, man, I don't know how you say his motto or motto, Nanji. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
His guitar playing, even his vocals are just so good. And then Tower of Power with their funk. And it was like, it just keeps getting better. Then it was Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and then it was B.B. King. And I was just like, this is, you know, I'm looking at everybody have a good time. My buddies are having a good time. But it seemed like it was hitting me on a different level, to where it's like, I don't want to have a good time music and look at all these people dancing and enjoying it and hitting on every emotion that all these people have. Like, that kind of thing really set a fire under me at that moment. And so we got back, and, you know, I put a band together. I was like, let's try this, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been wide open.
It sounds like you were almost at a Maslow hierarchy. You started with one band, and then you went up to self-actualization, to go from Indigenous to B.B. King, right? You like just went up that
absolutely
fast. So that's wild.
And I just couldn't, man, I couldn't get enough. I couldn't get enough. I was looking at, you know, every music magazine, every guitar magazine. You know, I felt like Johnny Five in Short Circuit. Like, I need input, you know, like, I just need it.
Johnny Five needs. Yes, absolutely. So let me ask you this. That it's so funny, because I bring up all these pop culture references, and getting around kids anymore, they are not going to know what that means. They are not going to know what Johnny Five is.
Not at all.
We're leaving that moon right now. So I'm curious. My bread and butter is interviewing the jazz community. And whenever I talk to all the young cats, they always talk about these stories of the elders that are keeping that fire alive, that are lending their experience and their knowledge. What's the blues community like? Are the older cats really like keen on making sure that the younger players are out there that are getting what the blues is all about? Is the torch always getting passed on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there, you've got some guys who are, you know, standoffish and, you know, this is my sauce. You know, you're always going to have that in certain areas. I was fortunate enough. There were guitar players that played with my dad Two in particular, George Creech and Billy Folsom. They were blues guys from our area. They were older. Now they're really old. But, you know, I remember them being so patient with me and me asking them questions and showing me guitar licks. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good, but put a little more soul into it. You know, find that thing. And just sitting on amplifiers every weekend watching these guys play, that was something special because I was like, these guys are doing it, but they also don't mind, you know, my little tail running around behind them going, you know, how are you doing that? What pedal is that? What, how do you make that sound? You know? So yeah, you're fortunate enough to run into a couple of guys sometimes that just really take you under their wing.
Yeah.
And really care. Because they do want it to keep going. They want to see you do well. And so I try to do that. Like we played the Blues Festival in Alabama a couple weeks ago. And, you know, at one point I look down and there's a bunch of kids down there. And I see myself sometimes as, you know, looking up and watching a band going, man, I want to do that. Maybe there's a kid down there doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that. So, you know, I talk to him after the show. I give him guitar picks. I'm like, do you play? You know, what do you like? What kind of music? You know, oh, if you like this music, listen to this guy. Yeah. You know, listen to that. Soak up everything you can. So it really is a cycle, I think. And you got to be a positive gear in that cycle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's it really is a community effort.
You know, the one thing about being a musician right now in 2026 is that it's no secret that in America we're going through some trying times. War, immigration.
Oh, absolutely.
There's all this stuff that's going on. Do you get a sense as a musician that people are more hungry than ever to have a little bit of music, live music, escapism, and you're the one that's a practitioner of giving that to them? How much of that is going through your head, and how much of you are you seeing a difference in the fans?
Yeah, I think everybody gets so stressed out. I mean, you look back, you know, 30, 40, even 20 years ago, like it just seems like now everybody is, you know, high anxiety levels, high depression, high this, high that. And I know personally, when I need an escape, you know, I try to look at, you know, music has always been that escape for me. And I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
You know, like so many people need that. Thank you. You know, that I forgot about my problems. I forgot about real world stuff. And like when we played in Memphis, it was, you know, we've had a few people come out and come up to us after the show and we're just like, thank you. I forgot about everything I had going on for, you know, 45 minutes. And it was amazing. Like it was a weight lifted. And that's why I do it. I mean, if I can hit somebody on a personal level, whether it's make them laugh, make them cry, make them sad, make them happy, you know, emotion is what you're after because it's real, it's authentic, it's not fake, it's not put on. And there's so much fakeness and meanness and things already going on in the world. So, you know, I know the blues sometimes gets a bad rap because it's like, you know, I feel bad. I mean, but there really is something healing about it that just, all right, you know, this is great.
Yeah.
So there really is something about that.
Yeah. I get it. So you're coming to Kansas City May 27th to the Mighty Knucklehead Saloon. Have you been to Kansas City before?
We have not. Wow. I have been wanting to play Knucklehead so bad because I see a lot of my heroes play there. And We are just ecstatic, man. We are super pumped.
So what's that going to be like? I mean, you know, you have this idea. What's your idea of what Kansas, from what you've heard of knuckleheads in Kansas City, as you walk into this experience fresh, what's your idea of what Kansas City's like?
Outside looking in, it seems like it is a very cohesive music community.
Yeah.
That I think that's, you know, it's not Austin, it's not Nashville, it's not Atlanta, it's not New York. It seems like it's a more down to earth feeling with some of the things that I've seen, you know, especially at Knuckleheads and places around Kansas City. It's real people that just, like I said, it's that authentic thing. And that's one of the reasons I've always wanted to play there, because I've, you know, seen guys, I mean, you got the, you know, Danielle Nicole and, you know, Samantha Fish and all them cats and Paul Thorne. And I see all these guys playing Knuckleheads. I'm like, man, everybody seems to just be having a good time, and they seem like real people. Like, there's no put on, and I want to be a part of that. Yeah. You know, it just seems like a real down home community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. And the barbecue is pretty good. So let me ask you this. You're going to be promoting Burn It Down. You got your latest single is Georgia Peach. Are these the, yep. Is that the music that you're going to really be pushing when you come here?
Yeah. So we've got three albums. Burn It Down is our latest.
Yeah.
And like I said, we are a collective of all of our influences. We are a melting pot of music. Being from South Georgia, there's obviously the Allman Brothers. There's, you know, you got Lynyrd Skynyrd right down the road. That Southern rock melting pot of music where you get the blues, you get country, you get classic rock, you get soul music, you know, we were very fortunate enough to grow up in a great little area where you might hear Otis Redding on one song, and then you'll hear, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd the next song, and then Allman Brothers, and then Stevie Ray Vaughan or ZZ Top. You know, it's we are in a great area for really good music. And you know, we want to bring, you know, our influences and our, you know, melting pot of music to everybody and kind of show them, you know, this is what South Georgia is doing. We're not just Luke Bryan and, you know, yeah. Uh-huh. Some of these big country cats. It's there's more down here than that.
Yeah, for sure. So at the end of the day, everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
My perception of myself. Guitar player, singer, band leader, dad, extreme goofball.
I love it.
I like to make people laugh.
Yes.
And have a good time.
I dig it. So let's say you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see one concert. Anywhere, any genre, anyhow, where are you going? What crowd are you going to step into?
Stevie Ray Vaughan, Alpine Valley, 1990.
Right on. You had that nailed.
That was his last show. That okay. was, nailed it, man. Eric Clapton, Buddy Guy, Jimmy Vaughan, Stevie Ray. The last show, I think that's kind of a pinnacle moment with all the greats, and that's it, man.
You know, every time I ask jazz musicians, Coltrane's high up there, but a lot of people talk about there was a Bill Evans show at the Village Vanguard and the bass player Scott LaFaro got in a wreck afterwards. It was a fatal accident and he didn't live. And it's, you know, it's those seminal shows. Like I even think about, you know, Richie Valens and the Big Bopper and, you know, after that, and Buddy Holly was supposed to be in that plane.
Oh, man, the Big Bopper. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like the annals of history are riddled with all of these little mysteries. And yeah, it's wild. But if anybody wants to pick up your music that will benefit you, download, buy it. I know they can stream it. Where's the best place? And to get tickets for the show, to find out about the tour, how can people do that?
Everything's on the website, derrickdove.com, DERRCK. Dove, like the bird, chocolate, or soap. yeah, derrickdove.com. All of our CDs, vinyl, t-shirts, all the links to the shows with the ticket links. Everything's there. Everything's on the website.
Right on. So this has been great, man. Thank you so much. Have a great time in Kansas City, and good luck on the tour and the albums. It was so good to meet you, man.
Man, very nice to meet you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Georgia, Nashville, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Derek for swinging on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.